This is the Business Storytelling Podcast with Christoph Trapp, available on Google, Spotify, Apple, Pandora, and other podcast channels. Want to play it on your iPhone? Just ask Siri to play the Christoph Trapp Business Storytelling Podcast, also available on Alexa. Here's Christoph with today's episode.
Hey, business storytellers, it's Christoph Trapp. Thanks for joining me another live stream episode of the Business Storytelling Podcast. And interestingly, today we are live. I think it's working on all the different channels. Looks like people are tuning in. Amazon Live. Check out the books at the bottom there. A Woman of Influence is the one that is featured today. So I have to click it over here. Now it's featured. Woman of Influence. I have that author on the show today, Jo Miller. Hopefully you guys connect with her. Check out her book, Almost 1,000, no, not 1,000, 10,000, 10,000 copies sold. I might get there one of these days. We will see. Fingers crossed. So we'll get some opinions from her on how I can do that. But today we're live streaming. I am paying attention to you guys. Twitch, Facebook, the official Christoph Trapp on Facebook, as well as my personal account, Periscope, Twitter, YouTube, LinkedIn, and Amazon Live. If you're listening on the podcast channels, feel free to connect with me on all those channels so you can hear these shows down the road as we are live streaming them. I'm telling you, the live streaming could not be possible. Got to change some things here without the friendly people over at Restream. I got to move out of the way this way. Restream.io/join/ctrapp. Take a look. That's how we live stream to all these different channels at once. Not sure how that would be possible without them, but check them out. Restream.io/join/ctrapp. Still a mouthful, even with the ctrapp at the end. Let's get her out of the comfy green room here and talk about, first of all, we'll talk about her book, but then we'll also talk about when do you say no? And this is what prompted today's discussion. You may remember Jo. She was on the show when we first started this podcast. And the audio, not her fault, my fault, the audio was not quite there. I mean, it was, production was not necessarily what it is today, where we're doing all this live streaming, where we're doing all these different things. So I'm glad she came back despite those technical difficulties back in the day. Here she is, Jo Miller. How's it going today?
Hey, doing really, really well. And look, full disclosure, this is my first time doing a live stream. So thank you, Christoph, for getting me out of my comfort zone and into the game.
Yeah, you bet. This is kind of where it is. It seems people are tuning in and watching and seeing what's happening. So let's get us started with what actually prompted the conversation. And as you guys heard me say before, I do take pitches. But I love finding my guests when they say something smart on social media, and then I ask them to come on the show because it makes me feel like I'm doing something. You know, I'm not just here evaluating 10-page pitches. And you said something about you got to stop, or not stop, you got to start saying no. So what's that all about, Jo?
Yeah, look, it comes from my deep belief and life experience that's pointed me in the direction of understanding that being a leader and leadership is not about doing more. Rather, it's about shifting from doing to leading, because sometimes in our careers, it's the things that we say no to or deflect off our plate or push back on that can be more defining of ourselves and our success and our career and more defining of us as leaders than the things that we say yes to and the things that we hold on to. And look, Christoph, because this is the Business Storytelling Podcast, can I tell a quick story about how I came to that realization?
Please, we love stories here, especially the good ones.
Well, hopefully it's a good one. It's not mine, but it's from a remarkable leader, very seasoned, very successful leader named Alice Catwan, who was really part of the inspiration for this spark of an idea. And so today she is the senior vice president in charge of North America sales for a really huge global software company. But back in the day, about a decade ago, she got her first big promotion into a director level role. And that's when her life became a whole lot more chaotic and unpredictable and unmanageable than it had ever been before. And by the way, this is what a lot of us are going through right now with COVID, with work and life no longer being distinguished, being smooshed together. Life is so chaotic and unpredictable. Anyhow, a decade ago, Alice found that trying to do it all as a new leader and a road warrior and a working mom to three young boys literally made her sick. Trying to do it all, be it all, landed her in a hospital bed with an IV in her arm. And a doctor came in and looked Alice right in the eye and said, you need to slow down and you need to do less, or you might not be here with your family to enjoy all of your success. And that's the moment when it hit home for Alice that being a leader doesn't mean doing more, and enlisting support was going to be crucial for her success, because of course the best leaders don't do it all, they don't even try. They enlist support from others, they learn to say no, they push back on the stuff that doesn't keep them very firmly in their lane. And so indeed it's this idea that from this moment forward, the tasks that you let go of and say no to and push back on can be the ones that define you even more sharply than the things that you continue to hold on to and say yes to.
I'm currently accepting requests for future virtual and on-site keynotes and workshops. In 2020 alone, I've spoken in Singapore and Istanbul, virtually, of course, thanks COVID. I can't wait to get back on the road, and if we still can't get on the road in 2021, I would be happy to speak at your event virtually. Please reach out to me, ctrap@gmail.com or authenticstorytelling.net. You want to do things, right? That's why it's so hard to say no, and I even learned this. I mean, I kind of have my rules, on, and I know some people have their own rules. Somebody, we had Seth Godin on the show a little bit ago here, and talking about his latest book, which is also, if you're watching on Amazon Live, it's in the bottom, just scrolling over. We're not going to take Joe's book off the featured spot, so you're going to have to scroll. There is like 40 total books in the bottom there of people who have been on the show, so we'll keep that list going when we go live on Amazon, so people can check out the books from previous guests as well. But Seth apparently has a rule. He comes on podcasts when they have had at least 100 episodes. Now, he didn't say that to me, and we're at episode, I don't know, 260 or something. 290 are already scheduled, 289. And so I have my own rules as well, right? Like, I do this for free. I don't do this. Like, I always go on podcasts. I don't even look whether they're successful, whether they've done it for 5 years. Somebody asked me to come on a podcast, I always say yes. If it's a 30-minute thing, right? If it's a 60-minute thing, if they want 5 prep calls, probably not, right? If they want to pick apart my graphics, you know, if they want to pick apart my PowerPoint, probably not interested. I take feedback, usually mostly from clients. Thank you very much. So I got those rules in my head, right? But I didn't have them in my head 20 years ago, right? 20 years ago, I would have been like, oh yeah, you want me to work for free for exposure? You bet. Happy to do it. But today that's a hard no. Right. So how do we get there? Is it just a maturity thing? We have to kind of, you know, get a little grumpier. Like, that's, I'm just talking for myself here. But how do we get there, Joe?
Yeah, I'll call it being strategically grumpy, right? Setting our ground rules, laying out our criteria. Like you, and it might be as we get on a little in the decades, I get a little more strategically grumpy about the things I'll say yes to. But look, I think, you know, back to your comment about Seth Godin, you know, as leaders, we're always wanting to GSD, get stuff done, right? But we want to be super strategic about what that is, so that we're able to make our greatest possible impact. And in our previous podcast episode, the one where the sound was perhaps just a little bit dodgy, we talked about understanding our personal brand, right? Like, who am I, and what's that unique value proposition that I bring to the world? What's, you know, what is it that I can do that is truly unique and valuable? And for me, it's the coming together of three elements. What are my strengths? What am I passionate about? And then what is it that the world or my company or my customer base or community really need and value? So if you can picture that Venn diagram, strengths, passions, value, your personal brand is when you hit the target right in the middle, hit that point of harmony between all three elements. And so I think the idea is to do the self-reflection to get a deep understanding of what it is that you uniquely have to offer the world, and then try as much as you can to stay in your lane. And the more you know what that brand or value proposition is, the easier it is to raise your hand and enthusiastically, unapologetically go after the stuff that is in your lane, that does help you build that brand professional presence that you're wanting to build up. And it makes it so much easier to say no to the stuff that's not in that sweet spot. And I will also say it also makes it a whole lot easier to do what I call co-opetition, right? If we're not clear on what our unique value proposition is, when I see, say, my friend Christoph getting invited to speak all around the world, if I'm not clear on who I am as a speaker, I get a little envious of that. And I start to maybe go after opportunities that aren't the ones that are right for me. But if I know what I bring to the world, that's my unique strength, passion, my value, I can say, you know, awesome, Christoph, good for you. You're speaking at a conference in Iceland. And then, you know, when that conference invites me to speak next year, but it's an online digital marketing content creator conference, it makes it so much easier to say no, thank you, and perhaps refer someone like my friend Christoph, who would be a great fit. So the better we know and understand who we are, we don't have to compete with others. We can cooperate or collaborate. So we get to that point of co-opetition.
And I didn't mean to make you envious, Joe, at all. And just for the record, all of my keynotes right now, I've given one a couple weeks ago. I don't know how long ago it was. Who knows what day it even is. A couple weeks ago in Singapore and Istanbul, and standing right here in the same spot. One was at 10:30 p.m. at night, and the other one was actually recorded. So no travel happening here. I'm not going anywhere. I've been here, and this is where I go. You know, it's the new world we're in, unfortunately. But those are good tips, right? Know what you are, know who you are, know what you're trying to do, and go from there. Now, you previously talked about a not-to-do list. And what's interesting about this, I'd like to hear about that. How do you make one? And I'm a list guy. I really am. I put stuff on my calendar. Do this today, do this, do this. And then sometimes, totally sneaky, I go into tomorrow's to-do list, right? And I'm like, now I feel like I'm ahead because I got that off my list for tomorrow. I wasn't even supposed to do this today, but I did. What's interesting about hearing about a not-to-do list, I tell people this all the time in marketing projects. We need to talk about what we're not going to talk about. What's absolutely off limits, especially when people try to bring new markets to the new products to the market, right? What are we not going to talk about? What is totally off limits? So once you know that, you can move forward. It's kind of a very similar concept, but tell us about, you know, the not to-do list.
I will. And you know, I love what you're saying. It's about putting up guardrails around, you know, what you'll enthusiastically go after and then what's off limits for you. In fact, I have two quick tools to share. That it all kind of comes under the heading of don't become indispensable for doing work that downplays your potential, that undersells all that you're truly capable of. And so I really encourage people, once they know their brand, that they start looking for those opportunities, even on their to-do list on a day-to-day basis, to shift their behavior and mindset from doing to leading, to step in and more fully express that brand and that leadership potential. And so one of the leaders that I interviewed for my book, Donna Munch, who was at the time vice president of cloud operations with NetApp, taught me this great little trick, which is she calls it your time portfolio. And so you want to just look back to a prior month on your calendar, pick any month, it doesn't really matter, 1 month in the past, and then go through and color code your activities using one color for when you were doing, you know, the tactical to-dos, the doing, and then use a different color for when you were leading, being more strategic, being more forward thinking and planful, maybe motivating, inspiring, enlisting others. And so go through that month of your calendar, color code the activities, one color for doing, one color for leading, and then just kind of take a step back and ask yourself, what are the trends? What are the themes here? And what might be some of the more tactical to-dos that you could let go of and step away from? And what would be some of the more bigger picture strategic leadership things you could do instead? So I think first you want to just understand what are the opportunities there, because I think no matter what moment or level or career phase our listeners might be at, there's always an opportunity to step away from the doing toward the leading. So once you've kind of got that list going, that's, I think, where the not to-do list comes in. And it's I'm going to see if I can pull up page 96 in the book. Here we go. Can you see my diagram there? This is our not to do list. Yep. All right. So got to start with a concept of shoulds. So shoulds are tasks that we add to the back of our mind or our to-do list that really give us no joy. And so we procrastinate on them, we put them off. And when we think about having to do this thing, this should, we get this sense of dread or guilt and generally feel bad about ourselves. And so the shoulds are those, you know, niggly things on our calendar, on our to-do list that really don't give us any joy. And nonetheless, we fail to check them off the list. So a good friend of mine once took me aside and said, "Joe, stop shoulding all over yourself." Right. So what I recommend doing instead is to create a not to do list, which is where you create a list of all these shoulds that you give yourself permission not to have to do right now. Like, just put them on the list. And I'm proud to say that yoga has been on my not to do list for about 15 years now. And it's okay to reassess. I would say after today, live streams, the not to do list, and onto the maybe do more of these lists. Some examples from my book, you know, one is invite neighbors for dinner. You can tell this is a pre-COVID publication, but I went out and built a 12-seater dining table so that I could do dinner parties for a dozen people, and quickly figured out that that means cleaning the house, cooking all day, cleaning the house again after your guests leave. And so inviting people for dinner is now on the not to do list and is going to remain there post COVID. One of the execs that I interviewed said she will not run or jog unless being chased. And I love that example. And I think for a lot of people, you know, clean out the garage is one of those shoulds that I think can go on your not to do list. So make a list. What are the things that you grant yourself permission to not have to do? Christoph, any come to mind for you?
Well, that's a good question. I don't like to do any work for free, honestly. There's some things, as I mentioned earlier, you know, that I do, like somebody wants me to do, like give the same keynote, you know, for 30 minutes or do a podcast and it's remote. I might do it depending on when it is, who it is, you know, what else I can get out of it. But not always. I definitely don't do any strategy or writing for anybody for free. It drives me crazy when people come to me and they say, "Oh, you want to write this 1,000-word article?" And here I am, you know, I got this article open, in fact, on the other screen here. And, you know, I'm going to get to about 1,500 words. I'm about 400. And it's been kind of like interrupted by the six-year-old who wants me to tell her why Zoom isn't working, you know, or whatever, or unmute Zoom. The 12-year-old, you know, wants something else. So I really don't do any of those things for free to people, because I know there's some value for some companies, but it's not the model I'm going after. What else? Yoga probably, it's been on my not to do list for 41 years, 42 years, whatever it's been. You know, I don't know what else. I've never even thought about what should be on my not to do list. Because I'm so busy trying to get all the stuff done that's on my to-do list, you know, so I guess that's probably part of the problem.
Yeah, you know, maybe there's going to be value in writing that down and also checking in on it, you know, on a frequent basis. Maybe, yeah. I found it was valuable. I created a not-to-do list for my personal life more than a decade ago and just happened for fun to share it with a friend. And she still checks in with me and kind of is an accountability partner on that list, the yoga especially, almost 15 years later. So I do think it's a really valuable exercise to write it down, and then you can reassess it, move stuff on or off the list.
Digital marketing for your small to medium-sized business? Reach out now and drop us a message at ctrap@gmail.com.
Another thing I just thought about is I can't stand when people want to meet with me to pick my brains. And it's like, seriously, I charge people for this, right? To pick my brains. And probably when it really hit me to stop, to really put this on my not-to-do list, was back when somebody invited me out for dinner to pick my brain. I was like, whatever, sure, I'm hungry. And then we didn't even have dinner. He ordered appetizers and a beer. And I'm like, what a bunch of crap. Like, this is like a, $200 meeting and you didn't even order dinner. So I don't do those anymore. It's definitely on my not-to-do list. You don't get to pick my brain. It's a little bit different when people ask me on podcasts, and I don't know what your opinion is about what we're doing here, but first of all, when you're on podcasts, so like right now, right, we're on all these different channels, and the chances are, Joe, if we make any money off this podcast, you will make more than I will, because chances are people will click the link to your book, so I get the affiliate money, which is not very much, and you will get whatever you normally get, which is more than the affiliate pennies. So the point is, but I got a podcast. I got a daily live stream. Somebody has to come on. So I try to find good guests, right? You want to obviously want to get out there as well, right? Try new things. Try a live stream. And how do you feel about live streams? Is that has moved off your do-not-do list?
It's heading in that direction. Okay. And it possibly depends on who asks. And you and I have collaborated, and it's always been fun. It's always been interesting. I've always been proud to share the podcast that we've created. And I know you're kind of a master at this. You're really at the cutting edge. And so I guess what I thought about is this going to be some valuable content I can share with my audience? Mm-hmm. And am I going to learn something from someone who's truly masterful at it? So definitely, this time moving across into the other column. And I think I'm probably going to continue. So far, so good.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much. That's a master. I'm far from a master, but I'm learning. It is a lot of work to pull off all these different channels, but it is getting easier and easier. Let's talk about your book. I got it up here. Women of Influence, 9 Steps to Build Your Brand, Establish Your Legacy, and Thrive. 10,000 copies sold. That's unbelievable. You have a copy right there. Well prepared. Love it. And so tell me, first of all, let me tell you my story, why I started writing books. And it was Joe Polizzi, 2016. And I said, why do I have to write a book, Joe? Stupid. Like, people can read my blog. And he said, it's different. Books have more authority. People take them. People read them. Which is an interesting comment, because my latest book, the majority have been sold as Kindles. My first book, the majority, by far, had been sold as paperback, so, or whatever, the hard copy. So that's been an interesting shift in those 4 years. I don't know why that is. And then we had about 1,000 downloads of the audio version. So that's been interesting too, because I didn't even have an audio version the last time. Tell us about, and I agree with Joe, it helped with authority. It helped with giving people something, right? Here's my book. Thanks for visiting with me. Or, sometimes I take it to projects, on sales calls. Sometimes when I interview for a job or something, I take it. And there's not many other people who can hand over a book, right? So tell us about, why the book? Why now? How did it go?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So I think I'm one of those people who took 2 decades to become an overnight success. And, I first started out as a speaker just because I got invited to speak at women's leadership conferences and I enjoyed doing it, and they'd refer me to others. And so I got by for more than a decade pretty much doing it backwards. Typically what someone does is they become a published author, then they go out and speak and sell the book, you know, kind of leverage the book to make a name for themselves. And I guess I just got so busy and so passionate about going into companies and going to women's professional conferences, working with the women, helping them advance their careers and become these powerhouse leaders that they were always meant to be. And then something funny started happening. People started coming up to me and saying, this is wonderful, very inspirational, very practical. Is there a book about this? And Christoph, a handful of people in particular just kept on and on at me over the years. Shout out to Olivia Shengreen, who was one. And it just became this ongoing conversation that I couldn't avoid. So eventually I just had to go out and write the darn book already and get it done. But I also think, so something that had bothered me for many, many years is there, you know, as you know, there were a ton of business books and leadership books and professional development books. But one of the things I noticed was that firstly, very few are written by women and very few feature the stories of women. And this thing kept happening to me where I'd pick up a book. For example, my mother-in-law has a fantastic leadership library. And I remember picking up a book one day in her living room and was reading all these great leadership stories and principles, but the stories and examples were all about men. And I counted up to about 11 examples. And then finally, there was this cautionary tale of what not to do. And you guessed it, it was a woman. And I remember just picking the book up and throwing it across the room. Then I remembered where I was, whose room I was in and whose book it was. I quickly apologized. But I started really looking out for, you know, whether there are enough books that featured the stories and examples of women. And so for me, that was a real driving inspiration just to get, you know, women's stories into a book on leadership.
And of course, we're getting more and more stories out there. I mean, now with the vice president elect, of course, and then I don't know if you saw the news also with the communications team is every leader on that team is a woman.
Yeah, it's remarkable to see. Really, really exciting to see.
Really exciting to see the what's happening. But there's so many leadership books out there already, right? How is yours different? Did you think about that ahead of time? There's so many topics, so many books already on that topic. How did you find a way to differentiate other than what you already mentioned with the examples of women leaders?
Yeah, and that story about throwing the book across the room was a really defining moment for me in deciding to go for it. And I'd also amassed more than 100 interviews in various webinars that I'd delivered with some really inspiring, very seasoned, very successful women leaders. And it just had been blogging and sharing quotes and stories and examples of them through the years. And so I, of course, wanted to bring a lot of their knowledge to a wider audience and showcase all of the principles and tips that I'd learned from them, like some of the ones that I'd shared earlier. But I also noticed too, and this thought just kind of evolved as I started writing the book, is that a lot of books will give you, you know, like five things to do. And so what's different for me is it's not so much about changing who you are by doing a prescribed method of leadership, but rather understanding who you are, because of course we all are already leaders, but sometimes we just need to figure out what our own leadership style and strengths are. So for me, this idea is that leadership's not about changing yourself, it's about becoming yourself and understanding your leadership strengths and kind of show up who you are, embrace those authentic leadership strengths and grow from there rather than follow like a checklist of, you know, 5, 6, 7, or 8 things to do that will make you a leader.
I think the whole thing of understanding yourself is something that has really hit home for me over the years. You know, back in the day, somebody would say, oh, this is how you are or whatever. And I'm like, well, I got to work on it. And now I'm like, yeah, whatever. That is how I am. You know, if it's a bad thing or if it doesn't fit in the situation, I try to manage it, right, for example, but I don't necessarily try to change who I am just because that's who I am. Sorry. That's kind of how it works, right? When people read the book, what do you want them to take away at the end? Like, what's the key takeaway? How do you move forward and become a better leader?
Well, to build on some of the things that we've spoken about so far already, one is understanding your own innate leadership style and strengths, and then build a professional presence or a personal brand around that. Shift from doing to leading, so do less, lead more. But I think the really big thing I want people to take away is that you don't need to become indispensable for doing work that downplays your potential and undersells all that you're capable of. In the words of one of the women whose stories inspired the book, she said, "I feel like I'm the best kept secret in the organization, and I feel like I've become indispensable for doing work that undersells my potential." And so my wish for anyone that reads the book is that they're no longer that best kept secret, that they can step up and let their authentic leadership strengths shine, become that leader that they were meant to be.
You know, the whole thing about being the best kept secret, I think sometimes that also comes back to people need to just share their stories, right? Don't think of it as bragging. You're just sharing. Just tweet about it. Just share it somewhere. And if you can't do it, have somebody else share it, right? Make sure they do it. I'm still a big fan of the Fridays in a company on a Friday. You know, you send out, here's what has happened, here's what's been going well, and then have other people share them, because you can't know everything, right? It's impossible. But why is it so hard for people to just share, their successes? I know this is not the first time we've talked about this topic, but I hear it all the time. Oh, I don't want to brag. But then you can't complain that you're the best kept secret.
And I think it's because so many of us have worked with that one person who overdid it to the extreme, and they were always like talking about themselves and how awesome they are, and kind of beating their chest and bragging and self-promoting, and it just gets tiresome really, really quickly. So many of us go, oh, I never want to be like that person, but we step a little too far to the other extreme and take away the message that it's okay to promote our awesomeness and our brand and our value and our accomplishments. So we go too far in the other direction, right? But one of the fascinating pieces of research that I dug up while I was researching the book is this great little very quick e-book put out by Hinge Marketing that's called Visible Experts. Mm-hmm. And they found that one of the most effective ways of self-promoting, if you want to call it that, I call it amplifying your accomplishments, but one of the most effective ways is just to share your knowledge. If you can educate people, even as you're sharing what you know or what you've done, people get great value from that. They love to learn from you. And so when we talk about amplifying accomplishments, I'd say don't promote every little thing you do, but be strategic. Think about your longer-term career or leadership goal or the brand you're building, and then amplify the accomplishments that align with those aspirations, right? AAAA. Amplify the accomplishments that align with your aspirations. So do it in a thoughtful and strategic way. And I think that's one of the reasons you're successful. You're so successful in what you do. You love to share knowledge. People love to learn from you. So show what you know and teach people as you do. And I think that's one of the best ways to showcase who you are.
And what's interesting, and thank you for that comment, Joe. What's interesting about that, too, is sometimes people think their knowledge, what they know, gets diminished because they share it. And I can tell you that is not the case. It doesn't happen unless it's some patent or some super secret something, But all this stuff I do, like somebody said to me one time, is this patented or whatever? I'm like, there's nothing to patent. Like, this is what journalists do around the country. Like, we're just literally doing what journalists do, right? Except we do it in a business environment. So you can't patent that. You can't copyright that. It's like saying copywriting writing, So I'm the only one that can write anymore going forward. Very interesting discussion. It was great to have you on the live stream. Joe's book, it is in the bottom there on Amazon Live, and it's also on all the other channels. If you don't see the link, just drop us a note. Let us know. We'll be sure you can get it. And of course, my book, Content Performance Culture, it's still on a Cyber Monday deal just today. Can I say that with a straight face? No, it's all week. United States and UK, 99 cents in the US. And Joe, what's the UK? I know you're not from there. Is it 90? It's pennies, I think. 99 pennies?
Pounds.
What is it?
Pennies and pounds. So,
pennies and pounds.
Definitely not euros.
They're not euros. So 99 pennies if you want, if you're in the US and you want to, in the UK and you want to buy it there. 99 pennies. Let's see. I was going to ask you something else. Forgot my train of thought. Either way, it was great to have you on the show. Thanks again for sharing your knowledge and your insights. And congratulations on 10,000 copies. That's awesome. Awesome to hear.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure talking with you today, Christoph. I always learn something.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening. Until next time.